Welcome to 3GT, the podcast where three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner, discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Well, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. I'm happy today to be joined with pastor and professor and president Barry York, and also our parishioner and ruling elder Scott Hunt. Barry, if you get any more titles, it's going to be your introductions are just going to keep getting longer.
Just call me the Grand Poobah.
So you are tuning in, our listeners, for another episode, and today we decided that we would stay on top of current events. As we are recording this, it was just yesterday that the world, or at least our nation, seemed to be obsessed with the Kavanaugh hearing. Of course, a woman coming with certain accusations and allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault by the nominee. And yesterday, as we're recording this, was the very long hearing wherein they heard both from the accuser and from the accused. And we thought it might be actually somewhat helpful, as we've introduced Scott in the last several months. Scott is a lawyer and one who actually deals with many cases dealing with this topic. And so we thought it would be useful to get his perspective and also maybe try to think about some of this in a biblical way. It is a bit of a political circus, and it might seem like a bit of a Gordian knot that is almost impossible to untie. But we're hoping in a few minutes here today to be able to help you think through it as we think through it as well. And so I think to begin with, just a general question for both of you guys, how much interaction have you had in watching or reading the events surrounding yesterday and then this morning as the Senate committee met? Did you watch much of it? Did you read a lot on it? What are some of your guys' first impressions?
Well, I did not have an opportunity to watch any of it. I probably could have taken an opportunity, but I was at work and so decided not to to watch any of the hearings. I did read transcripts of both, skimmed transcripts of both Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh's opening statements. And then I've read some of the responses online. I did take opportunity this morning to watch just a little bit of the Judiciary Committee's executive meeting regarding whether or not to approve Judge Kavanaugh. I ended up shutting that off because it just infuriated me.
Tell us what it really did.
I'm similar to Scott. I have not watched it extensively. I've seen a few clips, both of them and the Senate Judiciary Committee members. I did read both transcripts of their testimonies that they gave and a few commentaries on that, but that's been the limit of my involvement.
What, Barry, what are some of your initial reactions as you've done that? Do you want to share any of that? Or,
well, as you were saying in your opening remarks, this has become highly politicized. That's pretty obvious and clear. And I do think it's so hard. People seem to just react emotionally so much to this. And of course, it is an emotional thing to think about a woman being abused. It's right to have emotions, but I think it's beyond that, where it's almost, I was telling my wife that this digital age has created sort of a mob mentality where it just seems to enrage people. They get more information, I think, than they can handle at times, and people start reacting, I think, emotionally to these things and irrationally to these things without really looking at what should be the real guidelines of weighing evidence, listening to testimony, and that type of thing, which I think Scott will be good to hear on because he can guide us through this. How should these kinds of cases be treated? What really represents proper witness and testimony? Is that being followed in this particular? It doesn't feel like it to me, but I don't know enough to really comment on it politically. So I'll be interested to hear what Scott has to say.
One of the interesting things about this process is it's not a criminal hearing, so it's not. it's all up in the air. Nobody knows exactly what the standard, what the burden of proof is, what who carries that burden of proof in a prosecution. When it's the state, you know, the state carries that burden and has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. Well, we don't have that standard in this kind of hearing. Nothing has been established for that, so it is a bit tricky. But I think the one thing that we have to go back to, biblically speaking, is on the testimony of two or three witnesses that should a fact be established. And so if we look at it that way, you know, at minimum, we should have two or three witnesses establishing each fact. And so that's one of the things that I think you should be looking for when hearing, listening to both persons' testimony.
Scott, can I interrupt you real quick on there?
Yes.
Because I think that raises a really important point. You know, you just used the word biblically, and I'm just wondering, that is biblical, right? And then maybe we can get into that a little bit more a little later. But does that stand in civil courts as well? Is that what we might just call, do the civil courts recognize the wisdom in that? Or is the two or three, this is my, I'm pleading ignorance here. Is the two to three witnesses usually required or not really?
No, as a matter of fact, it is not. At least not in Indiana where I practice. If you have one witness who can establish things, who gives testimony, that's enough. But usually in cases like this, there's corroborating evidence. So a case of sexual assault, for instance, usually is done in secret. You don't do that in public. So you're not going to have more than one person who sees it. Does that disqualify the victim? No, it doesn't. There's other corroborating evidence that you can find. Who else was there? Was there opportunity? Was there DNA? What was the behavior afterward? So those are the kind of things that you look for to give veracity to somebody's testimony. And if you say somebody was there and then they say they weren't, well, then that's clearly not, you know, that other person has to say they were there. So, I mean, it's a tricky standard, but no, I think the word of one person is enough in modern day America.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's interesting that you point out, and it seems to be kind of uniting both the comments that you guys have made. You know, as you pointed out, Scott, this wasn't a criminal hearing, right? This wasn't actually a judge and a jury determining whether or not he was guilty. This was an investigation. They kept referring yesterday to it as a job interview, essentially. And yet it's interesting the way that the media spun it. It was interesting the way social media spun it, as in, you know, this guy is on trial and, you know, if he's found guilty today, let's throw him in jail. And I found that interesting. And Barry, that kind of reminds me of what you were talking about, just that mob mentality and how quickly, you know, irrationality seems to take over. I want to be careful in how I say that. You know, I was glued to the TV yesterday, and lest anybody think I was shirking duties, I was stuck in the Rhode Island airport. And then actually spent the night in Atlanta, the Atlanta airport. And so that's my excuse. But I was captivated by it. And it was really, I forget which news station reported it, but said it's probably one of the most momentous he said, she said showdowns of our time. And in many ways, that's what it was. And I want to be sensitive because, you know, as a father of four little women, I really appreciate the movement that is giving more voice and more exposure to this secret suffering that many women especially are facing in our culture and our society. You know, like I said, raising four daughters, I'm aware that they're growing up in this society, and I applaud courageous women, and I'm so thankful that there's a spotlight coming on to what is a sometimes very ignored aspect of our cultural sins. But at the same time, it was just a political circus, I think. I was amazed by it. So what else? What are some other thoughts? Scott, you've helped us kind of think through it a little bit legally, but biblically maybe, how should we think about these things? Is there a way to approach a fairly difficult situation like this? Maybe not. Some people might not think this particular case is overly difficult, but there are difficult cases like this. Senator Jeff Flake, actually, who's become a bit of a focal point in all of this, I really appreciated a comment he made yesterday. He said, at the end of the day, what you have are imperfect people making imperfect decisions about something where there's probably as much doubt as certainty. And as I was sitting in the Atlanta airport, I thought, you know, that's a good way to sum up many of our attempts to pursue justice. Sometimes there is as much doubt as certainty. So biblically, or just with wisdom principles, how else can we be thinking about situations like this?
Well, one of the first things we just all want to acknowledge is that any abuse of a woman is wretched. And just as you said with your daughters, you know, I have daughters. I know of women who've been abused. You want justice to be rendered if the abuse has taken place. And so in anything that we might say following this, I don't want it to come across like we don't care because you have a particular viewpoint of a particular situation that you don't care about women being abused. In reading the testimony and seeing a little bit of the clip, my wife listened to it as well. I think our impression was that she's had some kind of an experience in the past. I don't doubt that. I'm not like just saying that she's out and out lying. I don't feel that way about what I heard. But biblically speaking, for someone to come forward at this point in a process with this kind of a charge that doesn't have substantial evidence to prove its veracity, with all the connections to the opposing party that are there, I think there's enough reasonable doubt that this shouldn't be held. This event alone should not be held against this man to determine his worthiness or not of being a Supreme Court justice, given all the other factors and weight of evidence that's before us. And to me, that's just, you know, to be biblical, you want to be, you really want to look at all the truth that's presented, not just. To be equitable is to look at all the evidence, not just the evidence that favors my political viewpoint. And so to me, that's one of a few of the thoughts that I have at the start of this, is that I'm not seeing enough substantial evidence to warrant this. Even, you know, the wisdom of having all of this televised, you know, what is that? What's the purpose of all that, to have it televised? So people will say, well, the American people have the right to know. Well, do we? I mean, do we really need to? That's another thing. Biblically, there's wisdom in not hiding or playing down someone who has a charge against another person, but hearing that charge in a proper setting where it can be clearly evaluated by people who have more direct responsibility for the situation, all that, for the whole, you know, for everybody in America to suddenly become the judge and jury of this thing. We're only seeing pieces of what these people who have the responsibility are spending hours and hours weighing. And so we have to entrust the process to them rather than trying to determine ourselves. So those are a few of my thoughts.
I think one, and to go along with that, one of the things that has upset me the most in all of this is the lack of care that has been given for Dr. Ford in this case. Overtures were made to her through her attorneys to meet privately and discuss this privately, and those were not passed on to her. That's what I learned today, which I think is terrible. An investigation like this is as sensitive an issue as this is. You need to treat a victim like a victim and don't re-victimize them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what has happened to Dr. Ford in the past week. Right or wrong, she has been re-victimized by the political process, by both parties. Mm-hmm. Rather than investigating this quietly, figuring things out, having everybody look into this quietly, it has just been a big circus, I think, is what you said, Kyle. And so that has been infuriating. And then to put, this man who, there's no evidence that I've heard that he did this other than her word, to put him and his family through this. I mean, this has just been really a travesty of justice. In a criminal matter, before anything goes to trial, you sit down quietly and you go through depositions, you go through witness interviews, you go through interrogations, but that's all done privately. It's not out in the public for everybody to see, so you can get the facts straight to present your argument. That's not what we saw yesterday at all.
Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, and I think with that, I really appreciate the emphasis on Dr. Ford that both Barry and Scott in your most recent comment here have brought, because, and maybe we can talk about Judge Kavanaugh in a moment here. I have concerns for him as well. But, my concern with this is I agree with you, Barry, that clearly something I think there's, there was some credibility to an experience that she had. But as this has been made a political weapon, and just in an effort to be an equal offender, I will blame both sides of the aisle. The whole thing yesterday in my eyes was a political circus, Republicans and Democrats. And I'm actually afraid that by making this incident and Dr. Ford a political weapon against enemies across the aisle, what actually happened yesterday, I think, will delegitimize future sexual assault and harassment claims. I personally think it is doing a lot of damage to what I regard as an otherwise pretty good movement to expose many of these things, because all it is this politicized weapon. So anyway, I appreciate both of those comments. So concern for Dr. Ford. Should we have concern for Dr. Kavanaugh? Biblically, principles of wisdom. What do you guys think about that? Did you sympathize with him at all? Is there a way in which we can rightly and biblically sympathize with him? I saw an interesting comment on Twitter. Somebody said, when a woman comes forward and is sexually assaulted, nobody has any right to question whether she's saying the truth or not. I don't think either of you guys would go to that extreme, but can you help us think through how can we view Judge Kavanaugh, or if you want to make it less personal, those who are accused of things like this?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, like, I wasn't there. I don't know what happened, and I don't think there's enough evidence for me to weigh if it happened or not in one sense. So we're really talking about the process here. But I think we have to realize that men do prowl and abuse women. There's another case right now in our state that's taken place with a famous citizen of Pennsylvania, Bill Cosby. And I think it's just so crystal clear this man was guilty of these crimes, because there was so much weight of evidence, similar stories by many women, and he can't explain certain things. I just think it's so clear he did what he did, what they said that he did. But regarding this particular situation, yes, men do abuse women, and women, there are women who either will just lie in order to hurt a man that's hurt them, or stop a man from doing something that they want, or for reasons of power. I was reading one article where the lady who was writing this article was saying that we should always believe a woman who's accused, because the statistics show that less than 8% of accusations are false ones. And I sit here thinking, well, that does mean then that there are false accusations that are made. And so it doesn't mean that we always believe. Again, we have to go through a due process where we're really investigating and making sure to protect both the victim or potential victim and the one who's being accused. And I, again, just as Scott was saying about the due process of handling a victim, I think the same thing is there for the one who's being accused. And I do feel sorry for this man, especially if he's being falsely accused. All he's been taken through, all his, as he was saying, all his daughters have had to put up with in this case. So, I say that based on ministry experience. I've had women, again, most of the time, I'm right there. Yes, the men have been abused, but I've had two or three cases over the years where later the woman admitted that because of other reasons, she was lying about what she'd said about her husband or boyfriend. And so people do lie. Men lie, but women also can lie.
I think back to Joseph and Pharaoh's wife. Or not Pharaoh's wife.
Potiphar's wife.
Potiphar's wife. I'm sorry.
You're a parishioner. It's excusable.
Thank you. Thank you. If you mess up on a matter of law, I'll correct you and don't take any offense.
I believe that.
But I go back to that. You know, there is a story in the Bible where a woman lied. Yep. And yet there's also another story, Dinah, where she was, raped. So we have both stories in there. These are just not easy issues for anybody. And to just take carte blanche one side over the other without listening to the facts or doing a good investigation, I think is just, it's really unwise. It's foolish.
Yeah. I don't know if this, listening to everything yesterday and the confusion that surrounded the senators and just the mass hysteria in the media, this might sound a little weird coming out of such a bad circumstance, but I was very grateful for what God has given us in the scriptures. As I was unable to sleep in the Atlanta airport, that's what I was sitting thinking about for a little while before I turned a movie on. Just the biblical principles and the biblical precepts that are applied to pursue justice rightly. God shows himself in the scriptures to be extremely concerned for the oppressed, for the minority, for those who are weak, for those who are in otherwise helpless situations. But at the same time, and maybe somewhat uncomfortable to us, God shows himself concerned for the accused. Scott, you brought up the idea of two or three witnesses, right? That is a biblical precept, because God is concerned about the accused as well, about a right pursuit of justice. As I was thinking about that yesterday, I just thought it's so easy to vilify and demonize. And again, I say that knowing how much evil is in this world and raising four daughters and knowing what they're likely going to be subject to in this world. But the Bible does show us this concern for both the accuser and the accused. I thought as the Senate was grappling, as this committee was grappling with a standard, how thankful I am that God's given us a law that he says is just. We're not making rules up as we go along. We have the commandments and the precepts of God. And as Paul says, where is it? In Romans chapter 7, that the law is good and it is holy and it is righteous. God's law itself is an expression of his own inherent justice. And so I was thankful for that and reminded in all of this as well. It's very easy. I don't know about you. Well, I probably do know about you guys. I get very politically frustrated with these things and I want to throw my hands up and say, forget it all. But also I was reminded last night, God requires us to pursue justice. Micah chapter 6, verse 8, He has shown you, O man, what is good and what does the Lord require, that you act justly, that you love mercy and you walk humbly with your God. You know, justice, when we pursue justice, we are bearing that image that God has created us in, because God is just in his very nature. I don't know where I was going exactly with that. All that to say, you know, there was a great sympathy for Dr. Ford, because I think the Bible tells us to have sympathy for those who are oppressed. And there is a concern as well for those who are accused. And I had a concern for Brett Kavanaugh, and I think he has a right to be heard. And as you said, Barry, with due process and all of those things. Those were some of my thoughts. Mm-hmm. Well, what other comments? What do you guys think? Can I put it this way? What can we learn from a situation like this?
One of the things that I'm seeing in this is, I think, you know, why is this happening? I think it deepened so many people's hearts as the laws of our land, the political power that's seen and represented by the Supreme Court, because people have forsaken God and no longer have him as their highest authority, their ultimate trust becomes men. And they're trusting in their power and their ability to control things. And even if, let's say, Mr. Kavanaugh is guilty of this, but it can't be substantiated, he gets put on the Supreme Court, our faith has to ultimately be in God. To even use an imperfect man, or if he had done something like that, a very sinful man, he'll still do his work through these flawed individuals. He does it all the time. And so part of what I think we have to do, especially in the church, is to make sure that we don't start putting all our hope and our trust in princes, because the Psalmist tells us not to do that. They're not our ultimate savior. We have one who is firmly seated on his throne, ruling over all of these things. And so even if my particular political desires get frustrated, I can ultimately always just rest in Christ. And I think our people, you know, we're all elders. Part of our duties during times like this, when everybody's getting so wound up emotionally, is to try to bring a little bit more, you know, more calm and sensibility to the situation, so people can have conversations about it without argumentation and ire and anger. I mean, people are foaming at the mouth, and we've got to try to, at least where we have the ability to do so, to try to get people to really think about trusting the Lord in this situation.
I think this has revealed the heart of America and its base idolatry in politics. Mm-hmm. And we can argue about when it started, but you can go back in history and see that America has turned away from following God and followed this idea of democracy, the sovereignty of the people. And it is, I think it has just been laid out bare for us that there is an idolatry in the heart of America. And it's in the politicians, it's in the judges, and Barry, exactly what you said. People's, they're taking their eyes off of the Lord and putting trust in princes. And I think that's what it's showing us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we just went through another remembrance of 9/11 and those planes that struck our financial world and our defense by striking the Pentagon. You know, there was a plane that went down in our state that was headed toward the government buildings, and I think God was using the wickedness of those people in other parts of the world to hit right at our idols. Yes. Which are those very things, our finances, our defense. We think we're so strong and mighty in our government. That's just where we're putting our trust, and people need to realize the folly of all that.
I think one of the big reminders it was for me, and I touched on it a bit, but the idea that as Christians, we should be interested in true justice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very easy in the politicized world, the lines are drawn in the sand, and it immediately becomes a Republican versus a Democrat thing. But I think as Christians, we say, well, no, it's about true justice. It's about bearing the image of God. It's about living according to his standard and holding people to that standard. You know, it's very easy. We all know that the political the political collateral damage or whatever of this is going to be significant. You know, there's a lot surfacing about abortion, and that's something that we continually pray this country would sacrifice. But at the same time, as Christians, realizing the political weight of what's going on here, I think we need to put our commitments to God's truth first, and this idea that pursuing justice is not we don't put that on the back burner just to get a further something else that we think is right or a worthy cause. And we are to pursue justice because in that, right, that is an expression of love. Love does not rejoice in wrongdoing. It rejoices with the truth. Mm-hmm. And so that's just one thing that I thought about. Well, no doubt a very complex situation, and one that even between the recording of this episode and probably when it airs this coming week, many things will probably happen in those days. So we'll see where it all leads. But ultimately, as you've said, Barry, and as you've said, Scott, our trust is not in kings and princes. It is in the Lord. And so we as Christians can rest very confidently in that. Well, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. Head over to our website, 3gt.xyz. Follow us on iTunes. And if you feel so inclined, please leave a review on iTunes as well. We love to hear from our listeners. But we thank you for continuing with us. And we'll see you next time.